They will say, good morning, let's begin. Our show this morning is dedicated by Milton and Melanie Gertner in honor of the yahrzeit of Melanie's father, Roderick Donald Givner, Daniel Ruvain, Ben Avram, Zichrono Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah in the family in Nechama. Shkoyach. Thank you for sponsorship. So let's begin. Beautiful daf out of us today, Tzaddik Zion 97. And we are picking up on Tzaddik Vav Amud Beis 96b at the Mishnah. A lot to do today. So says the Mishnah. Rabbi Tarfon Omer. Rabbi Tarfon says as follows. Bishul mitchilas haregel, yivashul bo kol haregel. So we'll listen to this. So Rabbi Tarfon says something very interesting. Speaking about, we'll say, still the dinim of kalim, in which you go ahead and you cook sacrificial items. So Rabbi Tarfon says, if you use a kli at the beginning of a particular yomtiv, beginning of a particular regel, so you can go ahead and cook in it, when I say cook in it, meaning keep your sacrificial items in it the entire yomtiv, and you don't have to do merikin shtifa until the end of yomtiv. So we'll say it's a very dramatic idea. So you use it the entire yomtiv, but yeah, merikin shtifa is only necessary at the end of the yomtiv. The chachamim say no, ad zman achila. So ultimately, again, azman achil merik and shtifa. The chum say no, yeftu merik and shtifa at the end of the permitted window of consumption for each and every carbon that is put inside the kli. Good. Merika kmerika sakos, ushtifa kishtifa sakos. So what's another Mishnah says, merika is like the washing of a cup, and shtifa is like the washing of a cup. Now, what does that mean? Now, the way Rashi understands this is as follows, that merika refers to cleaning the utensil on the inside, and shtifa ultimately, again, means the cleaning of the utensil on the outside. Mariko shtifa betzonein. Furthermore, the Mishnah says, we'll say this will be a hotly contested statement. Mariko and shtifa, both processes are done with cold water. So it sounds like over here that the process of mariko and shtifa is mariko is cleaning of the inside of the utensil with cold water. Shtifa is the cleaning of the outside of the utensil with cold water. Top of Tzadik Zayin. Hashipud va'askala magilin bechamin. So we'll say a shipud is a spit and a grate. Ultimately, again, you do hagala. You have to go ahead and purge with hot water. So what this sounds like is, other kalim that have merik and shtifa, all you need to do is clean it inside, outside, cold water. The shipud and the askala, apparently because they're used for actual cooking, therefore what? They require hagala prior to merika and shtifa. Good. Says the Gemara. Let's analyze this. My time with Rabbi Tarfon. So we'll say, so the first shaila, the first order of business over here, is Rabbi Tarfon's statement. So remember again, Rabbi Tarfon made a very interesting statement that halacha lemaisa, when you go ahead and you use a kli for your different kavanos over the course of the regel, you use it once, when you only have to do merik and shtifa at the end of the yomtiv. So you could reuse it, so you can imagine, you could be reusing it for a week, right, for multiple days, and you only have to do merika and shtifa at the end. Says Gemara, my time is Rabbi Tarfon. What's Rabbi Tarfon's logic? D'amar kra ufanisa baboker v'halachti le'ohalecha. So we'll listen to this. The pasuk says, "You will get up, you will turn away in the morning, and you'll go to your tent." Now this is by Pesach. So we'll say, so remember again. So this pasuk itself is quite interesting because the pasuk essentially says you offer up Karban Pesach the first night of Pesach, and then in the morning you'll go back to your tent. The Rabbi says, "Now the pashlus, that's not true because remember again, the first day is Yom Tiv." People aren't going back home if you came from a faraway place on the first morning of Yom Tiv. To which the Gemara says, now Rashi points out over here, Panisa Baboker, Al Karchach Boker Shel Chol Ka'amar, the Karelei Boker Yishan, Abba Usev Pashtos, if the Torah is telling me, okay, great job, go home, what is it referring to? It's not actually referring to the first day of Yom Tiv. Instead, what it's referring to is what? The first day of Chol Hamoed. So why is this important? Hakosav Asa'a L'Kulan Boker Echad. So Rabbi Tarfon's model is that apparently you see that the Torah has made the entire Yom Tiv into one entity. The fact that the Torah says the next morning you'll go ahead and you'll go home, but next morning doesn't mean next morning. Next morning actually means what? The second day of Yom Tiv. Rabbi Tarfon says from here you can see that the Torah is making the entire Yom Tiv like one entity. So because of that, he holds that even if you use the same kli for multiple karbanos over the course of Yom Tiv, it only requires one merika and shtifa at the end of Yom Tiv. Doesn't require anything else. Maskif la Rav Achdabai, Barami. So Rav Achta Bar Barami says, well, if that's the case, you're telling me v'chi ein pigel beregel ve'ein nosa beregel. So using that logic, Rav Osei, that all of Yomtiv is one entity. And therefore what? And therefore halacha l'maisi, you only need one marikon shtifa at the end of Yomtiv. If that's the case, are you telling me then there's no pigel, there's no nosa? So we'll say what it sounds like Rabbi Tarfon is saying is that what? Yontiv is like one prolonged period of heter for sacrificial consumption. So no marika and shtifa until the end. So you're going to tell me that there's no pigel and no sar till the end as well. Maybe you'll say this is true. Yeah, that's what Rabbi Tarfon holds. Vatanya Rabbi Nasan Omer lo Omer Rabbi Tarfon ela zu bilvad. It's not true. Even Rabbi Tarfon Rav Osei holds that this is special and unique by marika and shtifa. It doesn't apply by pigel and no sar. Ela Kidrav Nachman, Ella Kidrav Nachman, Amra Baravua. Amra Baravua, Kol Yom Vyom Naase Gil Lechavera. So we'll say, listen to this, to which the Gemara reverses course a little bit. Rabbi Tarfon's logic, Rabbi Osei, is not that what. It's not the pshat that for some reason, from a halachic perspective, there is no obligation of Marika and Shtifa, ultimately again until the end of Yomtiv, but rather again, it reflects the view of Rabbi Nachman, who said in the name of Rabbi Baravua, who said that what? Each and every day, Rabbi Osei, becomes literally a kashering for its fellow. Which means what? Since over the course of Yomtiv, a person is consuming so many karbanos, so we'll say, what often happened over the course of Yomtiv? What often happened is you'd go ahead and you'd eat sacrificial meat in your kli one day, and then what? Then the next day you'd have more sacrificial meat in that kli, and then what essentially happens? Essentially, if you can imagine this for just a moment, let's say Sunday you go ahead and you eat sacrificial meat, then Monday you eat sacrificial meat, and you're putting it in the same kli. The moment you put hot meat in that kli on Monday, so we'll say that essentially does what? It purges the blios of Sunday. So because over the course of Yomtiv you're eating so much sacrificial meat, each day essentially kashers the absorptions of the day before. And that's why Rabbi Tarfon says, because the kashering is happening, there's no issues of any kind of blios, and that would become pigol or nosar, and therefore again, the marika and shtifa only has to be done at the end of Yomtiv. Take a look at Rashi. Naase gil lechavero. So Rashi says, mitoch shash shlamim mitzuyim beregel. Since we'll say a person is eating a lot of shlamim over the course of Yomtiv, ein balua shala naase nosar. Really, the blios, the absorptions in the kli, really never have the opportunity to become nosar. Never have the ability to exist past their permitted window. Why not? Shaharizman shlamim lebeiz yamim. Because also remember again, shlamim was the most common carbon brought during the yamim tovim. Because remember again, a person wants to eat meat, they also want to offer up a carbon. So the sacrificial window for shlamim is 2 days. 2 days and one night. Bichim mevashel b'shlamim b'ha'idna. Hadr mevashel b'shlam l'machar. So if I'm eating shlamim on Sunday, shlamim on Monday, u'baleam b'shlam shnishchetu b'yam ha'macharas, Upolate Masha Bala Esmal, Ubalem and Achronim, Nimsa Sheino Bali De Nosar. So we'll say, listen to this. So therefore, and he says the same thing by Chatos. Bim Bala Vasha Chatos, Zoy Levasha Achra Shlamim Boba Yom, Upolate Esachatos Ubalest Hashem. So we'll say, so bottom line, Rabbi Tarfon's logic is actually quite interesting. Rabbi Tarfon's logic has nothing to do with the fact that Yom Tov is one entity, therefore only one Marika and Shtifa. It's simpler. Rabbi Tarfon says, you're eating a lot of meat over Yom Tov. You're bringing a lot of karbanos over Yom Tov. So more often than not, what ended up happening, what does Rabbi Tarfon say? You ended up reusing the same kelim. And as long as you used the kli within the permitted window of the first use of the kli, so essentially you're constantly using the kli within the permitted window of the last carbon consumed in that kli, essentially, again, you're kashering that kli over and over and over. So because that kashering process is taking place, therefore what? Alts a kashrus perspective, the kli is perfectly fine because it's constantly being kashered. The merikin shtifa, therefore, only needs to be done at the end of the yomtiv. That's Rabbi Tarfon Shita. Chachamim omrim adzman achila. So let's remember again, the chachamim hold a little bit differently. The chachamim say, no, there's still a din of merikin shtifa again at the end of every permitted window of karbanic consumption. So my kamar, so let's say, what are the chachamim saying? Amra nacham amra baravua, mantin la adzman achila, v'hadar avid le merika ushtifa. So we'll say the Chacham's opinion is, at the end of the permitted window, or I should say at the end of the window of permitted consumption, you once again have to do merika and shtifa. Again, I'll both say, they're not arguing in the metzias ultimately of Rabbi Tarfon, seems to be they're a bit more concerned about the metzias. Rabbi Tarfon seems to feel quite confident that people are eating a lot of meat, and therefore you're always going to end up eating a second carbon still within the window of permitted consumption of the first. And therefore, in essence, you end up kashering that kli over and over. The Chachamim apparently are not as convinced, and therefore, halacha lemaisa, they require merikin shtifa at the end of every window of permitted consumption. So, min hanimili. So, from where do we know this? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Abba Yosi ben Abba, Ksiv, Umorak vishotav. So we'll say the pasuk says by Merikin Shtifa says a kli cheres asher tivashal bo yishaver then bekli nechoshes bushal umorak vishotav b'mayim. So Torah says you have to do Merikin Shtifa with water. Uksiv and the pasuk says kol zachar b'kohanim ye'achal. And I will say the pasuk says that this is the very next pasuk kol zachar b'kohanim ye'yochal. Excuse me. Osa kodesh kadashimi. All male kohanim are permitted to go ahead and eat of the karbanos. So says the Gemara, Haketzad. So what's the case? Now look at Rashi. Haketzad kilomar, lama samchan akasav lomar shemamtins manachilos. So we'll say, listen to this. So what the Gemara is really asking over here is, what's the nature of the juxtaposition of these psukim? Why is it that the Torah juxtaposes the pasuk in Merika and Shtifa to the pasuk of Kohanic consumption? Why are they next to each other? So watch this. Haketzad, mamtin la ad zman achila, Vahadar avid le merikin shtifa. Both say what it says is, use the kli during the entire window of permitted consumption, but once the window of permitted consumption comes to an end, then what? Merikin shtifa. So both say, so the juxtaposition says, all the chamta kohanim are permitted to eat the karban, fantastic. Once that window closes, time for merikin shtifa. So both say, so now here's what's interesting, is we've spent all of this time speaking about merikin shtifa. Now what are we going to do? We're going to discuss, by the way, what is merikin shtifa? Right? So again, remember, we've taken it for granted that there's this washing or cleaning of the kli. The problem, what we know, is now the Mishnah told us there's an inside and the outside. Merika is on the inside, shtifa is on the outside. But what's the nature of this cleaning, of this washing? See, here we go. So the Mishnah said, merika ka merika sakos, ushtifa ka shtifa sakos. Merika also is like the cleaning of the cup, shtifa is like the cleaning of the cup. So also, by the way, Rashi pointed out, I glossed over this detail, but Rashi points out to the Mishnah that we have this concept of merika by a kos, where? By kos shel bracha. Right? So also, there's a concept, ultimately, again, that by kosh shel bracha, before you use it, you're supposed to go ahead and clean it out. So we'll say this is actually halacha lemaisa. So for example, before you use a kosh by kiddush, or before you use a kosh by benching, there's a concept ultimately of cleaning it out, and actually by even leaving a little bit of water inside of the kli. That's merikas hakosh, shtifas hakosh by kosh shel bracha. So we have this concept in other areas of halacha of cleaning out. So we'll say, but how does it work over here by the kli? So it says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Merika u'shtifa betzonim divrei Rebbe. Rebbe holds that Merika and Shtifa are done with cold water. Both, so we'll say, so meaning what? Merika is cleaning out of the inside of the kli with cold water, and Shtifa is the cleaning out of the outside of the kli with cold water. The Chum say no, Merika bechamin, shtifa betzonin. So this is actually really very interesting. The Chum say Merika also refers to the process, it sounds like cleaning the entire kli with hot water, which sounds like what? Sounds like kashering, hagalah, right? And shtifa will be the process of cleaning or washing, rinsing the entire kli with cold water. So also we've got Rebbe saying, both are cold washings. Apparently, one is on the inside, one is on the outside. Chachamim say, no, first one is with hot water, second one is with cold water. So the Gemara says, here we go. My time, the Rabbanim, what's the Rabbanim's logic that the first washing is done with hot water? Very simple. Midi dahavi agiuli of the kochavim. So we'll say, the Rabbanim say, it's obvious. Why? Because the first one we'll say is effectively what? Kashering. Just like we saw the halachos of Giuli Obdi Kochavim Rabosei. That halacha l'maisa, if you purchase or you get a utensil from a Gentile, you have to purge it, right? You have to go ahead and kasher it before you're able to use it. So we'll say, remember what's happening over here. This is a kashering. I have an issue with the kli. What's the issue with the kli? It's been used for a karbon. Therefore, it has karbonic absorptions. Those karbonic absorptions are fine during the permitted window of permitted consumption. But once that window closes, I now have a problem. If Chacham say I need to kasher the kli, I can only kasher ultimately again with hot water. The Rebbe Amar Lecha, Rebbe will say, no. Amar Lecha Hagolah Lo Kamir. Rebbe will say, this is amazing. Rebbe says, no, Chachamim, you're getting some stuff mixed up. Of course you have to do Hagalah. Of course you have to go ahead and kasher the Kli. Marika and Shtifa is the post-Hagalah process. In other words, you already had Hagalah. You already had to kasher the Kli. After you kasher the Kli, then there is the process of Marika and Shtifa. Hagalah Kamina. Ki kamina la mariko shtifa de basr hagala. Wow. So we'll say, this is really amazing. So what we have over here is that, interestingly enough, here's good news. Let's make shalom. What does everybody agree with? You need hagala. Right? What Rebbe is saying is there's hagala, and then afterwards there is the process of mariko and shtifa. What the Rabbanan are saying, no. Hagala is part of the process of mariko and shtifa. Hagala is mariko. Hagala and mariko, bless you, are the same thing. So you do hagala, mariko, and then after you do hagala marika, then you do shtifa, the rinsing in cold water. So we'll say, see, here's the issue. So for Rabbanan, the Rabbanan will disagree with Rebbe. What do they say? So remember again, Rebbe's logic is umorak v'shota for Bosei is separate from hagala. For Rabbanan, imkin lichtov kra, o morok, o shotaf. So we'll say, the Rabbanan say to Rebbe, I don't understand. If you're right that both marika and shtifa are both washing in cold water, then why do you use different words? Why not just use the same word twice? And I would understand, obviously, if it's the same word twice, I understand once for the inside of the kli, once for the outside of the kli, but it's the same exact washing. So the Gemara says, morok v'shotaf. So we'll say, why does the Torah dafka use two different words? Shmamina marika v'chamen u'shtifa b'tzonin. Ultimately, again, the Rabbanan understand the use of two different words to teach me. Two different words means, what's Rabbanan say? Two different processes. That morak must mean bechamin, hot water, shotaf with cold water. Shmamina marika bechamin, ushtifa bitzonin. Ultimately, see from here that what? Marika must be done with hot water, and shtifa must be done with cold water. Berebi, so what does Rebbe answer? Iksev umorak morak hava amina trezimni. Iksev morak mor umorak morak hava amina trezimni. Morak, hava trezimni morak. O trezimni shotaf. So the kach ksiv morak vishotaf lomar lecha marika kamarika sakos shtifa kishtifa sakos. So we'll say what Rebbe's picking up on over here is lashon of the pasuk is umorak vishutaf. In other words, the pasuk could have just said morak shutaf or morak or shutaf. The fact that it says umorak vishutaf indicates to me that what? That halacha lemaisa, there are two different processes over here. What are the two different processes? Ultimately, again, kimerika sakos u kishtifa sakos. Coming to teach, I will say that what? That one is referring to merika sakos, which is the washing of the outside with cold water. One is referring ultimately again to the washing of, I should say, reverse. Merika is the washing of the inside with cold water. Shtifa is the washing of the outside with cold water. So we'll say fundamental machlokas between Rebbe and the Chacham about merika and shtifa. Rebbe holding they're both with cold water. One is the outside, one is the inside. But even Rebbe agreeing that this is preceded by act of Hagala, Chachamim saying no. Halacha l'maisa, merika is Hagala, shtifa is the washing of the kli with cold water. But say, how do we paskin? So the Rambam in Hilchos Maaseh HaKavanos Perek Ches, Halacha Yudbeis paskins like the Chachamim. Marika bechamin ushtifa betzonim. Paskins like the Chachamim that Marika means the washing with hot water, which is effectively Hagala. And shtifa is the washing with cold water. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, now it seems to be The one exception to this rule is as follows. Because remember, again, the Gemara didn't talk about it, but if you remember, again, the Mishnah did something very interesting. After the Mishnah said Marika and Shtifa, the Mishnah then said that the Shiput and the Askala require Hagala. So the Rambam here points out, and he says, Vashiput va'askala magilim b'chamin, b'mayim chamim, al-gabi ha'esh v'achakach madichon. So we'll say what's interesting as follows. We're not going to get into this now, but apparently actual cooking utensils require a more intense Hagala process than just the washing with hot water. So that's why the Mishnah singles out the Shiput and the Askala, which are actually cooking utensils that are treated a bit differently than, let's say, a kli into which hot carbonic food is placed. Well, again, we don't have to get into that right now. But we'll say, but bottom line, Halacha L'maisa, is the Paskin, now we have a working definition. Marika is washing with hot water, also known as Hagala. Shtifa is therefore afterwards the rinsing with cold water, the entire kli, like Techon. We'll say, by the way, something very important because we model this same thing today. Minag Yisrael is that after we go ahead and we kasha utensils, what do we do with them? We dip it in cold water. So I'll say, so where does this come from? So ultimately, again, this is modeled after the Marika and Shtifa, ultimately by the Beis HaMikdash. So really quite amazing. Let me do a question. Says the Mishnah. So the Gemara says this. Mishnah says this. Bishal bol kodesh v'chulin. So we'll say, here we go. Now we're continuing to go ahead and discuss the halachos concerning what you do with utensils in which karbanos were cooked or were prepared. Bishal bol kodesh v'chulin. So we'll say this case is a little bit different. Let's say now I have in one kli kodeshim and chulin, right? Sacrificial items and regular items. Oh, kodshe kadoshim and kodshim kalim. So we'll say the idea is over here I have a mixture. Kodshim and chulin, or kodshe kadoshim, kodshim kalim. So we'll say, what's the shayla? The shayla is, what's the status of the mixture? Image by Menos, same time. We'll say, if, let's say, the kodshim kalim or the karbanos are, there's a great enough amount to infuse flavor. Haria kalim ne'acholim kichamurin shabayan. So let's say, for example, I have a mixture of kodshim and chulin. If the kachim are what we call no same time, which means that there's enough of it to infuse flavor into the chulin, then the entire mixture takes on the status of the kachim, and therefore the mixture is consumed in accordance with the chumras of kachim. So we'll say ultimately again, the kalim, the unsanctified item, will go ahead and be consumed in accordance with the strictures of the chamurin. But we'll say, as we will discuss, the kli does not require merikah and shtifa. And we'll say, for argument's sake, and we're going to discuss all of this, in a case where it was a mixture of something that was pasul with something that was not pasul, it does not convey the psul through maga, through touching. Similarly, rakik, we're going to define what these cases are. Rakik shenaga berakik. We'll say, this is if you have a carbonic wafer, one wafer, which is a type of mincha, that touches another wafer. So we'll say, let's say one of them is pasul, one of them is kosher. Bechaticha, bechaticha. Or one piece of sacrificial meat, one piece which is valid, one piece which is invalid. So the Gemara says, Rakik shaga, rakik chaticha, bechaticha, lo kala rakikin, v'lo kala chaticha sasurin. The entire wafer, neither the entire wafer nor the entire piece of meat becomes aser. Eino aser ela makum shebala. So we'll say this is a different halacha now. That when you have something invalid which touches something valid, so the invalid item does not totally passel the valid item. Rather, the only issue we'll say that comes about is what? In the place where they touched. In the place where they touched, that's where there could be an iser. Again, we'll discuss further in the Gemara. Maikon, we'll say, what is the Mishnah saying? So now what the Mishnah is teaching me is that if I have a mixture either between various items or items of varying sacrificial sanctity, or for that matter, a chulin item with a kadosh item. So we'll say, what's the status of the mixture? It depends. If there's enough of the sanctified item to infuse taste into the non-sanctified item, then what? The entire mixture is treated like the sanctified item. So my kamar, emesha mino same time, harek halin shebahen, harek halin echon kichamurin, utuunin mariko shtifa, uposlin b'maga. So we'll say, if ultimately, again, I have a mixture I have a mixture of sanctified item with non-sanctified item, and there's enough of the sanctified item to infuse taste into the non-sanctified item, then guess what? The mixture is consumed like a sanctified item. The kli will require merika and shtifa. We'll say poslin b'maga means, and if the item was invalid, it could convey that psul through touching. Ein by meno same time, but however, again, if there's not enough to convey flavor, then the items of lesser sanctity will not be consumed like the items of greater sanctity. The kli doesn't require merika and shtifa. Nor does it pass through contact, to which the Gemara says, I don't understand. But the Gemara is asking on it as follows. The second case in the Shabbos is where you have a mixture between Kodshei Kadoshim and Kodshim Kalim. So the Mishnah said that if there's not enough Kodshei Kadoshim to go ahead and convey taste to the Kodshim Kalim, then what? Then the mixture is not treated like Kodshei Kadoshim, and you don't need Marika and Shtifa. But I don't understand. Even if the mixture is not like Kodshei Kadoshim, but it's like Kodshim Kalim, there's still a din of Marika and Shtifa by all Karbanos. So what does that mean? What does it mean when they say the kli doesn't require merik and shtifa? Kodshei Kadoshim. It means it doesn't require merik and shtifa as Kodshei Kadoshim. Aval kodshim kalim tuunin. But I will say it does require merik and shtifa als kodshim kalim. Rava Amar, Rava said, Haman, who's it being, does this reflect? Rabbi Shimon, the Amar kodshim kalim ain tu merik and shtifa. So we'll say it's possible that it also reflects the view of Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon in general holds that Kodshim Kalim do not require Merik and Shtifa. So Bishlam of the Rava, Hainu Diktani, O Kodshei Kadoshim, V'Kodshim Kalim. So we'll say, according to Rava, I understand why it includes the case of Kodshei Kadoshim and Kodshim Kalim. El Abaye Tartalam. But I will say, according to Abaye, ultimately again, why does it include the case of both Chulin and Kodshei Kadoshim and Kodshim Kalim? So Tzrichi and Nizbalt, I'll tell you why. Ditana Kodshim v'Chulin, if the Mishnah would have just said the case of Kodshim and Chulin, Hava Amina Chulin hu dimevatli Kodshim. So I would have thought about say that ultimately, again, it's only in the case of chulin that kodshei kadosh can mevatel it. The lav minayhu that I will say either chulin can be mevatel kodshim, kodshim can be mevatel chulin, because it's what we call a min shebe'eino mino, right? It's ultimately two dissimilar items. Aval kodshei kadosh and kodshim kalim ima lo. But in the case of I will say where you have both sacrificial items. Just one happens to be Kodshei Kadoshim, one is Kodshim Kalim. I would have thought that one can't really overpower the other. V'itana Kodshei Kodoshim v'Kodshim Kalim. For just the case of Kodshei Kadoshim v'Kodshim Kalim, have amina Kodshim hu da'alimi livatu le'Kodshim. I would have thought that one Kodshim has the ability to overwhelm the other. V'achulin emalo, but maybe v'achulin not, therefore tzvicha. There I need both cases of where Kodshei Kadoshim get mixed together with chulin, and where Kodshei Kadoshim gets mixed together with Kodshim Kalim. Rokik shegiya barakik. So we'll say, so what happened to shenaga barakik? Remember the next case the Mishnah Rabbah says where I have one, rakik is literally a wafer. It's a karban mincha. Where I have one karban mincha that's puzzle, which touches another karban mincha. So what's the halacha? Tan rabbanan. So we'll say, remember again, what did the Mishnah say? If you have one rakik which touches another rakik, Rabbah say, then let's say one of the rakikim, one of the menachos is invalid. So you have an invalid mincha that touches a valid mincha. What's talacha? The invalid mincha at most only invalidates what? The surface area, the point of contact of the kasher mincha. But it will not go ahead and invalidate the mincha in its entirety. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon, Kol Asher Yiga. So let's say the pasuk says anything that touches, Yochal Afilu Shelo Bala. We'll say, I might have thought that if a puzzle item touches a kosher item, so the puzzle item invalidates the kosher item in its entirety. Even though what? There's no blia. Even though there's no absorption, nevertheless, I might have thought that contact invalidates in its entirety. Talmud Lomar Bivsara. Therefore, the puzzle says Bivsara. That ultimately what? Ad Amadeis. Amadeis. Ad Sheyivla Bivsara. That ultimately, again, we'll say, an item only becomes puzzle in its entirety when the psul is absorbed into the meat, right, into the flesh of the kosher item. So we'll say, well, by the way, this is actually very important, because what the Gemara now is beginning to teach us, so we'll say, is that you could have, I guess for lack of a better term, what we'll call is a surface psul. What's a surface psul? That's this case. I have an invalid mincha, which touches ultimately, again, a valid mincha. So we'll say, remember again, without the medium of cooking, so we assume that an item cannot become usher in its entirety. So what happens when there is contact between a kosher item and a pasul item? So we'll say, what does that do? That conveys surface psul. Surface psul says that the point of contact will become pasul, will become invalid, but the rest of the item is totally fine. So we'll say, where are we learning this from? Because the pasuk says, Kola sheyiga bifsara yikdash. This is by the chatos, right? Anything that touches the chatos, yikdash. So we'll say, but the idea is bifsara means it's inside of the flesh. Kola sheyiga bifsara yikdash. Whatever touches the chatos ultimately again becomes kodesh like the chatos. So the Gemara says as follows: Ad sheyivla bifsara, until it becomes absorbed in the flesh itself. In other words, an item only takes on complete psul when the psul is absorbed into the flesh of the item. Yochel noga b'miktas chaticha yekula pasul. I'm not going to say if what. Let's just use the example over here. The invalid chatos touches a piece of something else, that the entire item, the entire entity, would become totally pasul. Talmud lomar yiga, right? Talmud lomar. So the pasuk says kol asher yiga b'fsara yikdash. So yiga hanogea pasul. So we'll say ultimately again that which touches will be pasul. To which the Gemara says haki. So we'll say the Gemara says I'm a little bit confused over here, because it sounds like there's two different things that's happening over here. What you're telling me is sometimes when there's contact with a devar hapasul, the quote unquote kosher item will become totally pasul. And sometimes when there's contact with an item that's pasul, only the point of contact becomes pasul. So how do you understand which case is which? So here we go. Ha kesar, chotech es makom shebala. So we'll say ultimately again, what it means is as follows. When there is, let's say, we'll say, an act of cooking something together with a davar pasul, so the kosher item becomes totally pasul because the psul is absorbed in the flesh in its entirety. And sometimes where there's just contact without cooking, so the psul is only conveyed to where? The point of contact. Therefore, what do you do? Chotech es makom shebala. All you have to do, Rabosai, is cut off the point of contact. And once you cut off, literally, once you go ahead and remove the point of contact, there was an interesting left one. You know, when we get to Maseches Chulin, we're going to deal with all of these halachos in the realm of kashrus, because these cases actually do come up. And halacha lemaisa, ultimately, again, we'll go ahead and we'll see how much of the surface area you actually have to remove. So it says the Gemara, bivsara. So we'll say when the pasuk says bivsara and chatos, bivsara, velo begidin velo batsama. So we'll say now we're going to darshan this pasuk just a little bit. So remember again, this is the pasuk by chatos. Kol hasheyiga bivsara yikdash. So we'll say if you have a chatos, specifically like either akasha chatos or chatos psula, so if something else comes in contact with that chatos, it becomes pasul. So we'll say it's only the flesh of the chatos that conveys the chatos identity. Bivsara velo begidin velo bat samas. We'll say, but if something comes in contact with the sinews of a chatos, or the bones of a chatos, or the karnaim, we'll say karnaim are the horns of a chatos, tafayim are the hoofs of a chatos. So we'll say in all of these cases, it is only the flesh itself which conveys chatos identity. The other, what we'll call subsidiary parts of the chatos, do not convey chatos identity. Yikdash. So the pasuk says, we'll say, kol asher yiga b'fsara yikdash. What does that mean? Lihios kamoha. We'll say that essentially, whenever the flesh of a chatas comes in contact with something else, it conveys chatas identity to that second item. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, Haketzot, im psula hiti pasal. If ultimately, again, the chatas is pasal, then it will convey that psul to the item that it touches. Im ksheirahi tochal kachamar sheba. And I will say, if the item that the chatas is touching, if the chatas itself is kasher, then I will say, what does it do? It transfers chatas sanctity to that item. Now, what does it mean to transfer chatas sanctity? So, for example, we'll say if you take a piece of chatas meat and you cook it with other pieces of meat, and let's say, again, for argument's sake, the chatas is the rove, the chatas is the majority of the mixture, then what happens to that chulin meat? What happens to that unconsecrated meat? It becomes like chatas. What does it mean it becomes like chatas? In other words, it has to be consumed with the strictures of chatas consumption. Good. So we'll say, so essentially, if you go ahead and you cook chatas meat with other items, chatas will always convey its status to whatever you're cooking it with, which is if it's a chatas psula, then the other pieces of meat will become basal. It's a chatas kshera, it's fine, the meat is still consumable. But halach lemaisa has to be consumed in accordance with the strictures of chatas consumption. So the Gemara goes weiter. Am I? So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. So why is that? So let's understand this. So what you're telling me is, so Rashi says, am I? Tipasal mishum hai purta. So we'll say, so the Gemara just said that if you go ahead and you mix a chatas psula with other meat, so ultimately, again, the other meat can become pasal. But why is that? Nei say, I say, v'litchi lo sase. So it's such a fascinating discussion. Let an ase, positive commandment, come, and trump a lo sase. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Nei si ase, deva'achlu osam dikshera. See, Rabbi say, think about this in just a moment. So let's say I have two, let's say I have different pieces of sacrificial meat, and they're getting mixed together. And I have chatas psula, that now is mixed with other pieces of kosher sacrificial meat. So now we just said, Rabbi say, that if the chatas has the majority, it has the ability to convey its identity of psula to the other pieces of sacrificial meat. But why? Why don't we say that there's an assay? We'll say there's an assay to consume proper, or not proper, we'll call it kosher sacrificial meat. There's an assay. Let that assay trump the lo sasay. What's the lo sasay? Rashi says, lo sasay. The lo socha, the psula. So we'll say, listen to this. So now, and I have this mixture of meat. We'll say, I have two mitzvahs. I have an assay to consume kosher sacrificial meat, and a lo sasay not to consume non-kosher sacrificial. When I say non-kosher, we'll call it pasul sacrificial meat. Why don't we say that the assay of consumption will go ahead and set aside the lo sa'asay, ultimately, of non-consumption, to which the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, ein assay docha lo sa'asay shiva mikdash. What's that is amazing. Rabba says, because even though in halacha we generally say, let an assay be docha lo sa'asay, and we're going to discuss this, normally we'll say, let the positive commandment come and set aside a prohibition. We do not say that when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash. But we'll say, where do we know that from? Watch this. Shenemar, ve'etzem lo sishbu rubo. We'll say, the pasuk by Karban Pesach says, you're not allowed to break a bone of the Paschal Lamb. You're not allowed to break a bone of the Karban Pesach. Now watch this. Reb Shem Manasseh says, echad etzem sheyesh b'moach, ve'echad etza etzem she'in moach. We'll say, that is true, whether the bone has marrow, or the bone doesn't have marrow. Now this is a big shayla. Amai, nesi asei, v'litcha lo sasei. So we'll say by Karban Pesach, I could say, an assay should come and say, look, what's the assay? What's the assay? To eat the Karban Pesach. We'll say, what does eating the Karban Pesach include? It includes the meat, and it includes the marrow and the bones as well. So let the assay of Karban Pesach consumption come and set aside the lo sase, the prohibition of breaking the bones, and allow me to eat the marrow. Rather, what do you see? But we don't say that. You can't break a bone of the Karban Pesach, even though I want to eat the marrow. What do you see from here? Elo, ein assay docha lo sase shiva mikdash. So rather, what do you see from here? That when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, we don't say that a positive commandment sets aside a prohibition. Ravashi says, I'm sorry, I lost the place here. Ravashi says, Gemara says, Yikdash asehu, ve'in asei docha es lo sa'asei va'asei. So we'll say, ultimately again, Ravashi says, no. In the case of Chata, so we'll say, where the Pasuk says, Kol asher yiga b'vsara yikdash. So he actually says, Rav Osai, that this chatas has an assay and a los assay. So even if you say ultimately again that assay is docha los assay in the mikdash, an assay will not be docha, an assay and a los assay together. And Rav Ashi is suggesting that by chatas, it's not just a los assay, but rather again, it's an assay and a los assay. Good. Ashkechan chatas demiskadish bebalua. Shark hachim. So we'll say now, I understand that a chatas has the ability to convey its status through absorption. So if you cook chatas meat with other meat, and chatas, let's say, has the ability to infuse taste, I understand that the chatas will infuse its identity ultimately to other items. Where do I know that? By other sacrificial items. So I know chatas. Where do I know everything else? So here we go. This is giving me a little bit of a journey. Amr Shlom Shlom Elazar. Zos HaTorah li'ola u'lamincho l'chatos u'la'ashem u'lamilum u'lazevach ha'shlamim. So we'll say, the Pasuk says over here, that this is the Torah, for the ola, the mincha, the chatos, the ashram, the miluim, and the zevach ha'shlamim. So we'll say, as we're going to see, this Pasuk is totally unnecessary. I don't need this Pasuk. So obviously, if it's here, it's here to teach us a drasha. What's the drasha? Here we go. So the ola, Ki ola. So we'll say, Torah is coming to teach me that it's like an ola. What does it mean like an ola? Ma ola tu'una kli, af kol tu'una kli, just like an ola requires a kli, a utensil, so too every other carbon requires a utensil as well. So the Gemara says, by the way, my kli, what kli are we talking about? Ilema mizrak, if you want us to go say it's a bowl. Every time I heard a bowl for Kabbalah, that when you shecht the ola, you have to have a bowl in order to receive the blood. So just like an ola needs a bowl, so too every other carbon needs a bowl. So the Gemara says, b'shalmi tzibor namik siv behu, vayikach Moshe chatzi adam vayasam ba'agonos. So we'll say, again, I don't need to learn out the need for a bowl from this word ola in this pasuk, because you already learned that before. Where did I already learn it before? I learned it before, ultimately, again, by Har Sinai. By Har Sinai, they offered up olos, and the pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu received the blood in bowls. So I already know that a chatas requires a bowl. Ela, this sakin. Rather, Rabbeinu, what I say is, ola, so we're going to see, by the way, what we're doing with this pasuk is we're going to learn out something unique from each word mentioned. So what do I learn from ola? I learned from ola that a karba needs a kli. Ola needs a kli. What kli are we talking about? It can't be bowls, because I learned that already. What's the kli? Sakin. Right? Ultimately, again, that an ola requires a knife. Now, we'll say, look at Rashi. Rashi's actually on Sadik Ches Amud Aleph for just a moment. Rashi says, Ela Sakin, Lishchita, Lafuke Tzur, Vekana, the Kli Sharisman. I'll say, watch this. You see, here's what I know. I know that I have to shecht an animal. But I'll say, you know, for Shechita, you don't have to use a knife. For example, you could use a sharpened stone. You could use a sharpened reed. And that's enough. Yet, what the Torah is teaching us is that ola, no, requires a knife. It's not just enough to use a sharpened utensil. It has to be a knife. Why? Because we'll say, apparently, again, a knife has the status of a kli sharis, and shechita has to be done with a kli sharis. So the Gemara says, that's what we're learning out from this word ola. That ola requires a knife. Va'ola gufa minala. We'll say, by the way, what's the source for saying that ola requires a knife? Here we go. But it's actually amazing to sieve. Va'yishlach Avram es yado. Because the pasuk says, Avram Avinu stretched out his hand and he took the knife. This is where he's about to shecht Yitzchak. V'hasam olahu dechsev. And Abbas, we know that Avram Avinu is ready to shecht Yitzchak as an ola. Dechsev v'yaleu liola tachas beno. He offered it ready. He was ready to offer him up as an ola. Meaning, excuse me. This is when he actually offers up the ayil. He offers up the ayil as an ola instead of his son. So therefore, from the word ola, I learned that what? That you require a kli. Excuse me. What kind of kli? Specifically a knife. And whatever it applies by ola also apply by other karbonos as well. So we'll say mincha. What I learned by mincha, my mincha in an echelus ela zichrei kuna, just like the mincha is only consumed right by male kohanim. Af kol in a mecha mel zichrei kuna, so to all karbonos are only consumed by male kohanim. Mahi. So what exactly are you referring to that other karbonos are consumed by male kohanim? Ichatas va'asham behajiksev. It's explicitly stated there. And if you want to say that it's shamit zibor, we already learned that from the additional piece in the pasuk, to which the Gemara says, "Meribuye dekrasi b'kodesh hakadoshim tochlenu kol zar yochel oso." Limeid al shamit zibor she'ina nechan el zichrei kuna. But we learn now from that pasuk that what? That shamit zibor ultimately again are only consumed by zichrei kuna. So we will stop over here for today. But the Gemara is saying, so what we're leaving off with a shaila. In other words, from mincha we're learning out that karbanos can only be consumed from zichrei kuna. To which the Gemara says, what karbanos are you talking about? If it's chatas and Hashem, it's already stated explicitly. If it's shamit zibor, we learn out from the pasuk. So we'll pick up a mirat Hashem with this limud tomorrow. Yeah.